They say the quickest way to a man's heart is through his stomach. And if that's true of men and women and children, then God is trying to woo us and win our hearts. Because God sure likes feeding people. God likes feeding people a lot. And so we have this great story. A couple of great stories. We'll start with the great story from the Gospel of John. We have this great story of this crowd of people. Jesus has been on the scene for a little while. They've heard stories about him. They've seen that he works some miracles, and they want to know what's happening. So this crowd of people follows him. About 5,000 people follows him around. And they want to hear what he's going to say. And he's been teaching and preaching and maybe doing some healing all day long. And it works up an appetite. And they've been listening. They've been paying attention to what he's saying, hanging on his every word, much like this crowd. Works up an appetite too, right? And so Jesus says, okay, well, I know we didn't discuss this and we didn't plan for this, but let's feed these folks. They've got to be hungry. Now, sometimes I think the disciples are almost caricatures. Like, they seem to sort of be put there so that we will recognize the best and more frequently the worst of ourselves in the story. Either that or the disciples were just really honest, ordinary people, and we honest, ordinary people have not changed much over the millennia, which is equally likely. So here come the disciples with their response. Jesus says, let's feed this crowd of people. They've got to be hungry. And the disciples immediately slip into their default mode. So here comes Philip. Philip says, oh, I don't know. Wasn't in our budget. Let me check. I don't know about that. Hang on a second. Do a quick head count for me, would you, folks? And so one of them does a quick head count. Looks like 5,000 to me. 5,000. Ooh. That's like a year's worth of wages. Oh, geez. I don't think that's going to work. We can't do that, Jesus. We don't have enough. And Andrew says, well, we've got this guy over here. He's got 5 loaves of bread and 2. Okay, he's got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Great. So now we've got enough for, oh, maybe a dozen people. Convenient. There are kind of a dozen of us. So maybe we could eat. And that only leaves 4,988 people. So they draw up some charts. Next slide, please. That's okay. I surprised you. They draw up some charts. Okay, we got this many people, and we got that much food. This is not going to work, Jesus. I don't know what we're going to do. Next slide. Let me show it to you another way. Oh, my goodness. If that's all the people, we can feed that teeny, teeny, teeny little sliver of people, and everybody else goes hungry. This is not going to work. This is not going to work at all. Say the disciples, we can't do this. All right, thank you. The next one will just go back. There you go. This is not going to work. This is not going to work. See, the disciples have to carefully calculate. They have to carefully calculate what the need is, what the cost is, what the resources are. And then they're going to decide whether or not it's even worth a try. As Andrew says, what is that to so many people? What does that possibly do for so many people? Well, we poke fun at the disciples and we laugh at the disciples sometimes. But as I said, they kind of remind us of ourselves. They're supposed to. They're supposed to, because we are disciples too. Author and consultant Gil Rendell says that there are kind of 2 ways of looking at the world, 2 mindsets we can have about what goes on around us when it comes to resources and things like that. There's the mindset of scarcity, and there's the mindset of abundance. And scarcity, he says, is when we measure carefully what we don't have. That's what the disciples were doing. They're measuring what they don't have. What we don't have is enough food for 5,000 people. That's what we don't have, Jesus. What we don't have is a year's worth of wages to go out and buy the food for 5,000 people. That's what we don't have, Jesus. We're measuring the need. And we're measuring what we don't have to meet the need. And that comes from a place of believing in scarcity, that there's not enough. Lynn Twist, the founder of the Soul of Money Institute, says, in the midst of scarcity, our relationship with money is an expression of our fear. And I would argue it's not just about money. It's about any resource. In the midst of a mindset of scarcity, our relationship with any resource is an expression of our fear. It doesn't matter if that resource is money or if it's bread and fish, as it was for the disciples. But it can be other things, too. We can have a relationship with, say, our time that is an expression of our fear. I don't have enough time. There's not enough time to go around. There's only so many hours in the day. And yes, that's a great program or something that I'd love to participate in, but I don't have the time. Or I don't have the energy. There's only so much of me to go around, and so on. There's not enough energy to give, to commit to something like that, because there's just not enough. We have a mindset of scarcity about all kinds of things. There's not enough parking spaces in our lot, and so we pull our hair out because there's not enough to go around. And I'm just as guilty of that as the next person, perhaps more so. There's not enough space in our church. It'd be great to have a thrift shop, but where's the space? There's only so much space to go around, and there's not enough. That's the mindset of scarcity. Unfortunately, that says something about what we believe about God. A mindset of scarcity kind of says that we believe God made a mistake, that God doesn't understand bar graphs and pie charts, that God created a world with too many people and not enough food in it, too much to do and not enough time to do it in, too many important things to give our commitments to and not enough energy to give it, too many people coming to church and not enough places for them to park. Oh, what a problem. Too many people in need of programs and ministries in the church, and not enough space, not enough resource to do those programs. A mindset of scarcity says we believe that God messed up, and that God somehow doesn't give enough, doesn't provide enough for us. We need to learn again the story from Exodus. We got these people of Israel, but they're not living in Israel. They're living in Egypt, and they're slaves. They're slaves, but they're well-fed slaves, because you see, Pharaoh also knows that the quickest way to a man's heart is through his stomach, so Pharaoh keeps the slaves well-fed so that they can do the work that Pharaoh wants them to do. So they're well-fed slaves, but they are slaves, and they want to be free, and they cry out to God, and God sends them Moses, and Moses leads the people to freedom, and they get out into the wilderness, and lo and behold, they didn't pack enough food for the journey, and now they're hungry. They're free, but they're hungry, and there's not enough food. So they start complaining. Well, their tummies are grumbling, so of course their mouths start grumbling too, and they cry out to God again, and they say, great, great. At least back there we were fed. At least back there we weren't dying, except every once in a while, but I mean, at least back there we were okay. We were slaves. Sure, we didn't have freedom, but we had food. Now, God, now, Moses, you've led us out into the wilderness to just let us die, and God says, oh boy. All right. Let's try this again. Let's feed these people. And so God explains this very specifically. And Moses and Aaron explain it to the people very specifically. In the evening, there will be quail. There will be meat to eat. And in the morning, there will be bread, manna, which means, what is it? Because that's what the Israelites called it when they saw it. What is that? I don't know. Manna. What is it? There'll be bread in the morning. And in the morning when there's bread, you go out and you gather. Each person gathers enough, just what they need. Not a surplus, not too much. You gather just enough, just what you need. And in fact, what the Israelites found was that they couldn't gather a surplus. Somebody went out and tried to gather twice as much, just in case, you know, because you never know what's going to happen. And when they got back to their house, they found that they had gathered exactly as much as they could, as much as they needed. And another person went out, and because they got a later start, or they weren't as fast, or you know, weren't able to pick as much, they found that, you know, it didn't look like as much as somebody else had gathered. And when they got back to their tent, they found that they had gathered the same amount. They had gathered enough. But still, the people didn't change their mindset and live out of a faith and an abundance. They were still thinking like out of that mindset of scarcity. And so some of them tried to save what they had gathered, you know, try to put some aside so that maybe tomorrow there might not be that manna. There might not be that bread. God said there would be, but we don't totally believe that. So we have to set some aside. We've got our one little omer. That's exactly what I should have, but I'm going to set half of it aside just in case. Save it for a rainy day. I'm not going to trust in God's abundance. I'm going to trust in what I can stockpile. And so I'll set some aside just in case there's some. And kind of like those of us who set aside money in the stock market and it went, They found the same thing with the bread. In the morning when they woke up, there was manna outside, just as God had said there would be. But the stuff that they had saved just in case was filled with worms and was stale and was inedible. Over and over and over again, for the 40 years that the people of Israel were in the wilderness, God taught them this lesson every single day, except on the Sabbath, because you get there twice as much the day before, and then it didn't go bad, so that you wouldn't have to work on the Sabbath. But over and over and over again, God reminded the people of this lesson. If you trust in my abundance, in my blessing, rather than living out of the fear that there won't be enough, everyone will have exactly enough. If you trust and don't stockpile for the eventuality that something disastrous is going to happen, but just live day by day on your daily bread, that's what Jesus was referring to in that prayer. We say sometimes, give us our daily bread, just enough. Then you will find that you always, always have enough. Everyone has enough. Because you see, we have that quote from Lynn Swisk that in the mindset, in the midst of scarcity, our relationship with our resources is an expression of our fear. The corollary is also true. There's another way of living. There's another mindset out there, and that's the mindset of abundance. And in the mindset of abundance, our relationship with money or any resource, our relationship with money and bread and fish and parking spaces and basement room spaces and time and energy and any resource we can imagine is an expression of our faith. Our faith in God's abundance. Our faith that God's blessing is enough for us. So we go back to the story from the Gospels about feeding the crowd. And some scholars have suggested that maybe this miracle isn't about a magic trick that multiplies bread and fish. That maybe this is a story about moving beyond fear. And one of the clues to that is that the very next story is also about moving beyond fear when the disciples see Jesus on the water and are afraid. That maybe this is a story about changing mindsets. And is a miracle that happens on several levels. These scholars suggest that, for example, when you went out to see a speaker, this was pretty common in the first century. I mean, they didn't have television, you know. So when you go out to see a speaker, to hear a preacher, to see a miracle worker, to explore what God might be saying through this person, when you go out to do that, that some folks who could brought along food with them. But the ones who couldn't, the ones who didn't have food to bring, well, of course they didn't. But some folks did. They packed a picnic lunch. Well, good for them. But here they are sitting in the crowd, and they're sure as heck not going to share their picnic lunch with anybody else. And then here comes Jesus and this young boy. What an act of faith on this young boy's part. Why does he have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish? That's his family's dinner. That's what his family has to eat. And he offers it to Jesus. And Jesus says, this is going to be enough. And Jesus blesses it and he begins to pass it around. And maybe there's a whole heck of a lot more than people expect, but maybe something else happens as well. Maybe some of those folks who had their own picnic baskets went, well, huh. And they opened up theirs. And they started to share what they had. And they said, you know what, I've got a little bit more than I need. I have a little bit of surplus here. I'm going to share with somebody else who doesn't have any. And so all of a sudden, Jesus is sharing and there's more bread, but then other people are sharing too. And the food just keeps coming and coming. And so all of a sudden, there's not just enough for those 5,000 people. There are baskets and baskets left over. And that surplus, by the way, because God gives us enough, not surplus to stockpile, that surplus is not stockpiled by the disciples so that they can go eat it. They each get a basket, woohoo, of their own bread to take home to, you know, to do whatever they want with. That is gathered up so that it is not wasted. so that it is not wasted. I read this week that nearly half, an estimate of half, of the food in the United States that is produced and purchased and prepared, that somehow or other makes it to a table somewhere, nearly half of it ends up in the garbage. If you think of all of the food that goes bad before people can eat it, the canned goods that we can't even give away in the food pantry because they've expired, the stuff that's in our shelves and on our refrigerator shelves that we have to throw away because it's gone bad, if you think of the stuff in the restaurants that's left over when people are done with their meals that they either take home with them and throw away or that they leave and is thrown away, when you think of the stuff that sits in supermarkets and distribution centers and never even makes it to somebody's table, nearly half of the food in this country gets thrown away. And our moms were absolutely right. There are people starving in other parts of the world who would eat that food and would need that food if we would get it to them. But it is wasted. Jesus has the disciples gather up those 12 baskets of bread, I believe, not so that they can hoard them, but so that they can give them to other people who are hungry, or his name's not Jesus. That's who Jesus is. Not a scrap of that food is wasted, but it is given to those who are hungry, not just in that crowd, but beyond. And what the people find on that hillside that day is that when they believe that God is going to give them enough, not so much that they can hoard, but enough for their needs, then they all have enough. And not just them, but others. There's enough for others as well. Now, there's a really, really incredible example of what it means to live with the presumption that God gives enough and that when we bless and break and share, that there will always be enough. And you'll have to come back next week to talk about that and to see that, but I bet you can guess at what it might be. Moving from scarcity to abundance, moving from this mindset of fearfulness that there's not going to be enough to a mindset that there is always enough in God, is something that the church already does and is something that is part of our witness to the world. It is different because it is countercultural. I read this book this week, last night, later than I should have. It's called Enough, Contentment in an Age of Excess by Will Sampson, cleverly and helpfully titled for this week. And Sampson writes, among other things, that we need to practice believing that there will be enough because it doesn't come naturally. It didn't come naturally to the Israelites, didn't come naturally to the disciples and that crowd of 5,000, and it doesn't come naturally to us. It's something we have to cultivate. He writes, the belief that there is enough is something we need to practice. We do not need to stuff ourselves. We do not need to act like the world will end tomorrow and eat, drink, and be merry. We do not need to store up for ourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. And that last is from Matthew 6. I confess, he writes, that I'm not good at this practice. As the youngest of 6 children, some of my earliest memories are of feeling there would not be enough. And I'm fed the message of insufficiency on a daily basis, from the car I do not have to the sex life I should be striving toward, measuring what we don't have. Advertisers want us to do that because then they can sell it to us, whatever it is that we don't have. Thus, he says, to begin to truly believe there is enough is a radical, countercultural statement and a practice I must inhabit. Just like practicing the presence of God in our lives in prayer, practicing the belief that there is enough is something much more easily done in community. Community. That's what Jesus creates that day on the hillside. He takes a crowd of separate, desperate people who are fearful and clinging to what they have, fearfully, carefully counting, measuring what they don't have, and he turns them into a community. He pulls them out of that mindset of scarcity, and he pushes them, he forces them, disciples included, sometimes kicking and screaming into a mindset of abundance. And then from that place, from that expression of their faith and not their fear, they learn, they believe that God's abundance is enough for them. They stop measuring what they don't have and they start realizing that God's blessing is beyond measure and they find that everyone has enough. One of the beautiful things about Jesus' miracles is I believe not a one of them, not a one of them is done. Not a one of them ended at the end of the story that we hear about, or ended with the death of Jesus, or ended with the resurrection of Jesus. Every one of those miracles is still happening. Jesus is still working this miracle today. Jesus is still finding us, separate, desperate people, in our places of fear, in our places of scarcity, where we are carefully measuring the things that we don't have. Jesus is still finding us there and pulling us, calling us, ripping us, if necessary, away from that mindset of scarcity and pushing us, kicking and screaming, into a mindset, into a worldview of abundance. And when he does that, he fashions us into something new. He changes us from a crowd of fearful people into a community of fearless people who live on the premise, on the promise of God's abundance. And if that's not a vision statement of what it means to be the church, I don't know what is. A community of people, fearless people who live on the promise of God's abundance, that God provides enough, not only for us, but for everyone. And so feeding us, not stuffing us, not gorging us, not giving us enough to stockpile for ourselves and waste and throw away or hoard and never touch again, but feeding us enough, God does win our hearts. And God teaches us a faith that drives out fear. God forms us into a fearless community, a church grounded in the practice, the radical, countercultural practice of the belief that in God there is always, there has always been, there will always be enough. Amen.